Well, good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 24th of April. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce everybody to you. We have a great panel. What a group. And we're so proud to have all of these wonderful folks with us. Let me introduce them to you. Jim Henler is here. He is Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI, better known as Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. And the new gig is...
I'm the acting director of the IBM RPI Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration.
Now, does that supersede this other, or for a momentarily? Okay, all right. So should I add it to the former?
Yeah, leave that one.
Okay, I'll leave that one. Excellent.
Could I ask
of course.
A question really quickly? Listen, I have three grandchildren now, and I want to buy, since we're tetherless, I want to buy a tetherball for them. I get that, but who puts the tetherball in the ground? How do you get that in the ground?
I'll study up on that, Alan. I'll get back to you.
So you study, right?
It must be one of the classes we teach in the tetherless world.
I do know that often pool companies will put them in.
Oh, yeah?
Because they have that equipment.
Handymen also.
Yeah.
It's got to go deep.
Gotta go deep.
The same That's guys the who put up the basketball things in your driveway.
There you go.
No, I don't like that.
But do people really play tetherball? I remember in my playground, it was always that thing that sit there that like nobody ever really played because nobody knows how to do
well,
it.
Well, at Camp Bronx House, that's all we did was play tetherball.
And funnel ball? Remember funnel ball?
No, I missed out on funnel ball.
Well, funnel ball was the one that there was a funnel, and then there were four outlets.
Oh, yeah.
Each with a color, and then you threw the ball up, and it would come out. You know, you would each be a color.
It sounds like fun.
It was fun. Let's go find one.
Let's do that.
That's right. Yeah. Two of us can do the show. Four of you can play funnel ball. That's all good. Terry Gibson is with us. He is a former New York State Senator, SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor, and our Wednesday regular. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Great. Happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. Chris Churchill is with us. He is a Times Union columnist. Always on the tip of everybody. Yes, the Times Union columnist, and we're thrilled to have you here, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Always good to have you here. And Jen Smith is with us. She is an award-winning reporter for the Berkshire Eagles. She is one of our favorites, and we are thrilled to have you here. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Alan Chartok is with us to remind us of a very special event that is happening next week. Do we have the stuff?
May the...
I'll find it.
May the 3rd.
Yes.
That's a Friday.
It's May 3rd at 7 o'clock, Alan.
Yeah, and that's our tribute to Pete. And he'll, you know, people are signing up now. It's getting real close to the event. I'll be there. Our board chair will be there. Our vice board chair will be there. These are all people who know and love Pete and who really just... will be there to hear the great Happy Traum, who is probably the best interpreter of Pete that we have now, was a best friend of Pete, was a great collaborator, and he'll be here with us, and we can't wait for this event. So 1-800-323-9262, again, 1-800-323-9262, or do it on the web at wamc.org, but do it. Or as Pete would say, take it easy, but take it.
Three quick things on this. Number one, it's a week from this coming Friday. So this coming Friday.
Wow,
that's a week
getting
from,
close.
Yeah. So it is. It is very close. Second of all, what better place to see a performance like this with Happy in such a beautiful, intimate place as the Linda?
And if you've never been there, it's something else.
And it's gorgeous. And everybody who goes there is just knocked out by its acoustics and how beautiful it is, and also of the intimacy. And as Alan has mentioned several times, that, you know, we're going to sing. So for goodness sakes, what better place? And the other thing is that the proceeds support the Lock Box going into the June fund drive. So that's all good stuff. WAMC.org, if you want to do it online, you can just go to our website and you'll see right there it says Pledge Now, or you can give us a call, 1-800-323-9262. And I think Happy's going to come in within a couple days and going to talk to you about this.
Yep.
So it's all good stuff.
Yep.
All right. Okay, we've got all of the housekeeping stuff out of the way. Let's get on with the actual show. And not that the other part, that was a very essential part of the program. I don't want to dilute it in any way. So this is what we know. There's a lot of, let me start with this. Joe Biden is we didn't know, and then we thought we knew, and then we wondered, and then we thought we knew, and then we thought maybe not, and now it seems as it's a definite, Joe Biden will enter the race tomorrow. Tomorrow he will enter the race, sort of. He'll enter the race with a video tomorrow, and then on Monday he'll have his first event in Pittsburgh.
I can't wait to hear what Chris has to say about this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, now take it away.
That puts a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah, a lot of pressure on you, Chris. I hope you have something very, very pithy to say. Go
ahead. Well, I think it's big news, obviously, for Democrats. I mean, he's going to enter the race as the front runner. He's ahead in all the polls. He, you know, he's going to take the moderate lane, which is kind of a lane that isn't really all that well occupied at this point. And you know, we'll see how he campaigns. He's kind of has a track record of not being really the greatest campaigner in the world.
And if he sees some stuff on the street, he has a penchant for stepping into it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but so does the president, right? And that doesn't seem to harm him in any real way.
Well, the thing, Chris, about Biden is that here is what the narrative is saying. Bernie can win the primary, all right, because, by the way, the latest polls shows them absolutely even, Biden and Bernie, with, you know, Mayor Pete coming up fast as a third candidate. But he can win the primary. Bernie can win the primary, but can he win the general election? Can he win the purples who are in the middle? That's the issue.
Well, and can I just ask another, just because, yes, that is the issue. And also to what Chris raised about this idea of the centrist who is kind of alone in that, and how will that go in the current state of our political affairs?
Yeah, well, I think he'll probably do well with that. I mean, there's definitely a lot of energy on the progressive left, but I think there are still a lot of kind of more traditional Democrats who are kind of looking for a guy that they can get behind. And I think, you know, I think it could go either way with Biden. I could see him kind of cruising to victory, or I could see him kind of falling flat on his face. Mm-hmm. It's not. I really don't know what to expect from him. I'm not even sure. The one thing I question is what he hasn't really, and maybe this will become clear in the next few days, he hasn't really told anybody why he's running. I don't really know what his candidacy is about, whereas I do with Bernie or Elizabeth Warren or a lot of these other people.
Peer pressure?
Well, I think we know something. I think we know something about what Biden's positions are going to be, because, you know, he is closer to the Hillary model without being Hillary. He's closer to the Hillary model than, and the Times analysis, which is where he's going to get the money from, he's starting out with zero, no money. The Times interviewed a lot of the traditional big givers, and they're going to give him money. Now, whether that won't help him in a primary, because, you know, the more people who invest in Bernie, the more they feel passionate about him. You give somebody $25, you really care about that person because you've put some money into it. But if there's just a few, and the Times, I think, really did quite a job. If it was the Times, I read so much, but really quite a job on him where this money would be coming from.
Yeah,
I think that's risky.
I'm still not convinced.
You're not a big fan, right?
Oh, of Biden?
Well, of him running.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
No, I'm very curious to see what he does.
Once a senator, always a senator.
Listen, I think he has a great chance to become president, and I think personally he would be a good president. I just want to see us get a candidate in there that can beat Donald Trump, and I'm kind of waiting to see if he's going to do that. I'm not convinced still that the American public at large, when you look across the entire country, is really drilling down on where candidates' money is coming from, whether it's big dollars or small dollars. I mean, I certainly care about that as one who really believes in campaign finance reform. But looking at who we have president right now, I'm just not sure that's an issue that really plays in terms of electability.
Okay. I agree
with
you on that.
I'm also on Joe Biden's front. I'm waiting to see the passion from Joe Biden. I'm waiting to see him stand up and, as Chris said, tell us why he's doing this, tell us what he believes in, and tell us what it is that motivates him. And the passion from all the other candidates is there in a very visceral way. I'm just not feeling it from Biden yet.
Is it safe to say, and I think, Alan, you've made this point several times, that he feels it's his turn?
Yeah, but we've seen how dangerous that is. I mean,
I'm not saying it's not dangerous, but yeah. I'm saying is that what he's feeling?
Well, but I don't think entitlement will get you there alone, especially in this. You know,
I'm not saying
climate.
It's a winning strategy.
No, you're right.
But and he is going to have a lot to answer on the campaign trail, and he's behind in that regard too. Again, you still have these allegations of touching coming up. That's going to happen. You're going to have
more of that, and
Anita Hill. Again, that won't go so far away.
He has the longest record to defend, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I think. Again, he's sort of missed out on this town hall, gauntlet that CNN's been doing, and we'll have to kind of catch up there. I think also, again, he hasn't been out among the masses and doing that sort of grassroots mobilization that has gotten all of these other folks that are front running the top.
But he has the thing that they don't have, which is huge name recognition.
Yep. Huge. Right.
I mean, absolutely. Bernie has it to a degree at this point, but I think Biden still, everybody knows who Joe Biden is.
And gravitas.
Right. And experience. Yep. I mean, I think this is kind
he
of an
is presidential.
This is a kind of an anti-establishment age, and experience is kind of seen as a bad thing. And you can talk about all the baggage that comes with having a long record. Mm. But, he's running against a lot of senators, and senators tend to not be practical in certain ways. I mean, I think there's something to be said for mayors and governors running. And while Biden hasn't directly governed, he's at least been in the room, when somebody else was governing, I guess. Which is, he's got experience in that.
It's definitely a pool, though, that he's never competed. I don't think anyone's competed on this level, too, where you've had so many people who were no names who have emerged as well and a very quick time versus someone who's been in the game for a while.
But let's remember real fast, he was Obama's man. And Obama is still the most popular guy that the Democrats have going for him.
And they had a very successful partnership.
Yeah. Let's be honest, too. Biden should have run in 2016. I mean, if it doesn't work out for him this time, I think a lot of people will look back at 2016 and say that was when he really had the window.
Shoulda, woulda, shmoulda.
Yeah.
So, you know what I find interesting is we have this long primary process, right? And who's going to deal there and how that's going to go? I don't know. I think what Chris points out about the middle. So if you look at the data, that middle is what's going to deliver this election.
Is what? Got,
that the middle is what's going to deliver this election.
Without
question. The primary, or the general?
No, the general.
And
so
that's why.
And it's going to have more to do with whether they vote or stay home.
Mm-hmm. And that's the
so
enigma.
In other words, that's what elected Trump was Democrats who stayed home. And the data, within 3 days we knew that. It took a year till everyone agreed. But it was absolutely the case that it was, the suburban middle.
So if Bernie wins the primary, the problem will be in the purple in the middle.
And
take
Biden,
a look. I'm sorry.
For exactly
one last thing.
One at a time. One at a time.
You're exactly right, Joe. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead.
But really quickly, the fact is that we'll see Bernie might very well win that primary. But if you look at the House of Representatives and just how the Democrats took the House, it was from the middle. It wasn't the AOCs. It was the middle that won, the purples that won. And that's why it's so important for the Democrats to consider all of that.
Yeah, well, I agree. And I mean, so I think that's what's going to make this so interesting is that you have these two competing forces, one which tends to win out in the primaries and one in elections. So if you look at what happened with the Republicans last time, you had someone like Kasich in the middle who really would have had more probably would have won the popular vote if he could have.
Well, he wasn't on television firing people.
Yeah. But right. But again, he didn't have the ability to pull in the edges he needed to get to where he could become the candidate.
I can't his trouble. But, I can't wait to see the two newspapers represented in this room, who they editorialize for, whether, my bet is going to be that you'll see the Berkshire Eagle doing going down the Bernie road, and that you'll see the Times Union going down the Biden road. Let's see.
We shall see. The other thing you mentioned, Kasich, and just quick, is because we only have about a minute before we go to a break, but is he running? Because he is all over the place.
Yes.
I see him on everything. Is he running?
Oh, stop. I get letters from that guy.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Every day he writes me a letter.
Well, that's what I mean. So wouldn't that indicate that he's going
to
run?
His mother must have told him you're going to be president someday, but he's off the wall. Don't forget it. He's
No. You're not answering my question. Not winning, but will he run?
Why not? You know, you only live once.
I think he's trying to position himself to be there if Trump crashes and burns.
Cuomo, too. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Cuomo, in my conversation with him yesterday.
Meaning if Biden burns. Mm-hmm.
Cuomo would be Biden, right?
Yeah. So Cuomo yesterday is calling Bernie a Democratic, is calling him a socialist. So this country's not ready for a socialist. Sounded a lot like Trump to me.
Well, Cuomo almost endorsed Biden, or essentially did endorse Biden, right?
No, he did not. He goes out of his way.
He comes very close to doing so, though.
Yeah, but he's like Kasich. He's exactly the same thing. He's there just in case, and his papa set the way. That's exactly what his father did all the time. You know, he's standing
by. The plane's on the tarmac waiting to go to New Hampshire.
And by the way, every time he did, his numbers went up.
All right, let's take a break. We will hold, and when we come back, we'll continue with our panel. We have a fresh batch of letters, so we'll get to those as well. We have Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, Terry Gibson, and Jim Henwer. A great group. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith. We have Chris Churchill, Terry Gibson, and Jim Henwer before us. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has the letters, and here we go.
Thank you. Good morning, panel. I know Alan does not care for him, but when Seth Moulton enters the race, he can and will moderates. Good-looking, centrist war veteran. He is the future, and he is 39 years old. And that's Kevin from Melrose, 55300.
I mean,
nobody in this room is old enough to know the New York City ads.
I know who he is.
Come on, Melrose 55300.
Oh no, that I thought you meant Seth Moulton.
Oh, Seth Moulton. I feel like he's just stepping in to sort of promote his name for future campaigns. I can't see him being a viable candidate this time around.
I mean, Biden's one thing because he has the name recognition, but anybody else has lost a lot of time if they're getting in now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's
20 people up there now.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Well, people like Seth are very young, so for him, it makes sense to jump in and keep his name out there, and probably will pay off 10 years from now.
Well, there seems to be no downside to running. You get your own CNN town hall.
There is a downside, and that is what Harold Stassen found out. You become a sort of non-serious, perpetual candidate, and people tend to dismiss you.
Sort of like happened to Ronald Reagan, too, though, but except that in the end he won. So, it's hard to say.
But if you're looking to be a national figure or boost your name recognition, there's really no better way to do it. I mean, the free publicity of a CNN town hall alone is you can't pay for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he did announce, didn't he? Didn't he announce on Monday that he was running?
Yeah, I think he's exploratory.
He did,
right?
No, he didn't. I thought he did.
Okay, I'll check.
And Nicole wants to know, why aren't you talking about Elizabeth Warren?
I think we have talked a lot about Elizabeth Warren. I know she's always in the mix. We talked about her yesterday at Great Lakes.
Hey, she kissed me. That's all I got to know.
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, take that into consideration.
Good Lord.
That was
Did you consent?
That's disqualifying, isn't it?
Next letter?
Yeah. Next letter, said Jen.
I think she's definitely in the. I mean, she's in the mix. Everyone, yes. I don't know. I mean, we haven't talked about her today because we've been so focused on Biden. But you know, I think she's.
Well, we were talking.
She's in
about
that
her,
kind of second tier candidates right now.
We were talking about her yesterday at length because of impeachment. She is the one who really has embraced this idea of pushing impeachment. So we did talk about her yesterday.
She also pushed that new idea on education.
Absolutely.
Yes. Making the new, you know, I mean, she's good. The interesting thing about Warren is she's very good at framing issues and getting conversation going, but it doesn't seem to be reflecting back on her in the polls as someone who's.
No.
I think it's because so many of her ideas are ideas that people associate with Bernie that they. He kind of gets the credit when she talks about free education, all that kind of stuff. He almost gets the credit for it, you know, which isn't fair necessarily, but that's just the way it goes.
That's the challenge for that sort of progressive party of candidates there.
Right.
Anyway, Gloria writes a very interesting letter. No, 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 she says. Not another old establishment candidate. Didn't work last time, won't work this time either. People clearly want change, not the same old, same old. Name recognition won't win out over vast amount of baggage this guy carries. Anita Hill being at the top of the heap. Please, let's move on. Gloria from Vermont. Did I read that letter well?
Yes, you did.
With
very
great
passionate.
Feeling and yeah. feeling. But if he wins the primary, if Joe Biden wins the primary, then you have two guys with baggage, one arguably more baggage than the other,
I
right?
I would say, how about the tape, you know, yeah. grab him by the you-know-what.
Well, yeah, but he had that out before and he won.
Right, so it is amazing how Democrats are already sort of pointing at the various candidates and talking about their personal baggage, and yet none of that baggage really compares to anything that the current president has with him and got him elected. So...
Nothing.
Maybe Americans don't care as much about the personal baggage as we think they do.
I don't know.
I think Democrats do.
I think this is, I mean...
Well, aren't Democrats Americans?
What are you saying, Joe?
I'm going to use an Allen line. Don't put words in my mouth.
Linda from Hurley, where everybody keeps it down. We've had old men, young men, white men, a black man, and now a gay man in the primary. Do you see a pattern? Linda from Hurley.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Men.
Huh? Men. Men.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
men.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point. It's all about men. But we have all these other, we have a lot of women in the primary this time, don't we?
We do.
Absolutely.
We do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a good
point
thing.
Being
so
made.
Let's remember that. Zach says, do you have any data supporting the hypothesis that Bernie would do worse than Biden at courting the purple middle in the general election? Bernie's internal polling has him ahead of Trump in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. As you well know, our previous centrist candidate did not fare so well in those states. Well, I don't want to get a big fight started here, not much, but I can tell you,
just a little skirmish.
I do see a difference between Hillary, who had a tremendous amount of baggage, and I thought that the Clintons were frankly not behaving well. They were going around, they were getting money, they were making it personal, and of course, you know, so I think Hillary was seen as old news. Now, I think Biden has a reputation in this country as being a square shooter and an honest guy. You can talk about Anita Hill, but it's not the same thing as what we saw with the President of the United States in the famous, now famous tape, which my wife made a T-shirt out of. And what he said there. So I think there's a qualitative difference between the two people.
Yeah, but that also has to count within, like, his own pool of the, you know, 20 candidates that are running. I think people are still going to separate that out until they're finally put together. I think it's too early to look at the numbers, really, at the end of the day.
Like state-by-state polling numbers for the general election. But
you also have to keep in mind that what the Republicans haven't done yet is they haven't gone on the attack against Bernie Sanders in a way that they went on the attack against Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And we never really saw them do that because they mm-hmm. were attacking Hillary Clinton. If Bernie should rise up and continue to be the candidate, you will eventually see Republicans go on such a enormous attack in ways that we can't even comprehend right now, that they will find a way to
because
bring his numbers down.
That would be for any candidate, I think.
But I think for Bernie, even more so. I think he lends himself to a lot harsher, more critical attacks than, I'd say, Joe Biden does in the long run.
But, Senator, they want him.
I know they want him. That's why they're being quiet right now.
Well, every once in a while, the president will call him Crazy Bernie.
Right. But they want him so that they can unleash those attacks at the premier time, which will not be until after the primary if he's the candidate.
Yeah. Well, we don't know how America's going to react to the label socialist, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the big – and I think Trump wants to run against somebody who calls himself a socialist. I think that's, you know – But the other thing about Biden, though, I mean, going back to what the letter writer was saying about Bernie, it is still true that Biden is an establishment candidate in an age that does not like establishment candidates, and mm-hmm. that's always going to be his problem. And there is an argument to be made that somebody like Bernie, if you had somebody who would inspire a lot more passion in people, or maybe not even Bernie, one of the other candidates too, really get the base out, that's maybe a better way to win the election than going for the center. But
well, that's sort of how Trump got elected, was that he inspired passions
and
energy people who wanted a change to the establishment.
Right. And will again.
Mm-hmm. The thing that Biden does, though, that Biden can just take states like Pennsylvania away from Trump. And if Trump doesn't win Pennsylvania and he doesn't win, you know, Michigan, he's got no path, really. You know, so just strategically, Biden makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You know, what worries me, and again, it's about all the candidates and the whole Democratic Party at the moment, or anybody beating Trump, is, you know, he ran this totally unconventional way, right? Hillary made every decision correctly by traditional politics, right?
Except from traveling to three crucial states.
But for example, her vice presidential choice, right, was a very safe choice, who would pick up a swing state, right? Absolutely what you do in a traditional year. Right. That year, the vice presidential candidate should have been someone who could fight back against Trump. Imagine if it had been Al Franken or someone like that, who could have had that one-liner ready every time Trump attacked. It would have been a very different election and those kind of things. So I think this year, you know, what I worry about, even though I've been doing it myself, is you look at the data, you project things based on normality and things like that. But again, I think it is definitely the year that somebody could come out of, I would say the left side, but the wings somewhere, and do something.
I think the thing really that hard to know the Democrats happen. Have to be concerned about is that they could very easily get to the convention with nobody, without a nominee. Mm-hmm. I mean, or with three or four different candidates who all have a lot of delegates and who have a claim to be the nominee. And then, you know, if you think it's messy now, just wait.
Right. And if that infighting happens, you know, the Republicans are going to pounce all over.
Right. And what if Bernie is really kind of the guy who's got the most, but they kind of take it from him because there are still a lot of Democrats who think he's going to lose.
Some will argue that was what happened.
Right. And then so do the Bernie people get angry and walk away and not vote in the fall?
They did last time.
Right. I mean, we're outlining the big fear that Democrats, I think, have looking ahead.
By the way, that stuff about, you know, the deadlock convention and the fourth, everybody, every journalist who has written a column has written about what if this thing is going to be deadlocked, and what you just said basically doesn't happen anymore. Because by the time we get there, it's basically over.
I think
the conventions have
I know that everybody always predicts that, because journalists want the best story.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
Nothing would be better than just the chaos in the streets at a convention. But
I remember Miami when I was there, and the canisters were going off, tear gas were going off.
Yeah, that's not necessarily that kind of chaos. But
72.
But you know, there are a lot of candidates with the money to stay in the race for a very long time. And they're not, unlike the Republicans last time around, the Democrats have a huge field. But unlike the Republicans, they don't do winner-take-all primaries. So each one of these guys and ladies will be picking up delegates in all the states, and no one's going to come away with a clear, decisive edge.
I predict that by the time we get to the convention, said Popeye, that you're going to have a winner. You'll have a winner by that time.
Who will it be?
Well, okay.
If you're going to make predictions, let's hear them.
Right now, if I was a betting man today and putting money down on the table, I'd say Bernie wins the primaries, which is a dangerous situation for the Democratic Party being Trump.
All right.
You've heard it.
Okay.
All right. Let's
take
a break.
I'll something else tomorrow, and then when we come back, I'll see. You'll say, "But you said." I said, "No, but on Wednesday." I said, "Thursday." I said,
"That's there. You go. Cover your bases." All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have more. We have more letters, and we have much more to talk about, or lots more, as we say in the States. We'll be right back. Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion as we continue on this morning. Alan trying to keep order in the room, and it's difficult. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, Terry Gibson, and Jim Henler. I'm Joe Donahue. Alan has letters.
Okay, from Dave. Horse race coverage is totally the wrong way to get here. Baggage? Really? How about framing the conversation as to the death struggle to save the American democracy that it really is? Hint, the media's non-coverage of climate change is not the model to employ anymore. Dave from Granville. I think that's a pro-Biden letter, but I'm not sure. What can I tell you? All right. Biden's baggage, says Bob. The panel's making a mistake when it equates Biden's baggage to Trump's. The real issue is whether Biden's baggage, especially when weaponized by Trump's surrogates, will depress the female and particularly black female vote. Trump supporters will joyfully carry his bags for him. Will women carry Biden's is the big question. I predict that the vice presidential nominee is going to be a woman of color.
I mean, it's true that Trump has a lot more baggage, but I think the point that that letter misses is that Biden's baggage is going to be a problem in the primary,
that's
not
right.
in the general election.
Well, that's right.
The stuff that we're talking about is going to hurt him with Democratic voters, not the general election.
Yeah, and I think the letter writer understands that. Bob from Albany does understand that, Chris. But I think.
Will he make it through the primary, not whether he'll be. Yeah.
Could be. I think this is going to be a blowout election, and I think the president, the existing president or the faux president, is going to be beaten quite badly. We'll see. And that could even mean Bernie. Andrew says, good morning, moderate here. Biden doesn't have an identity and needs to make his own name for himself separate from Obama, and he won't be able to stand up to Trump. Bernie is a socialist. I'll never vote for him. Warren is a woman. And Trump will destroy her. America won't elect a woman. I don't see any Dem so far beating Trump so far. Okay, so I just gave the other side to that, right?
Mm-hmm. All right. You did.
Okay, Teresa says, Alan keeps saying the middle won the congressional races. What he fails to mention is that because most of the Dems that ran were from the middle, not the left, he doesn't know that more leftist candidates would not have done as well or better had they run. Okay, and that's from Teresa. And Jay from Delaware County. Good morning, Biden. I'd vote for Daffy Duck instead of Donald Trump, but will be less than enthusiastic about a Biden run. He's got a ho-hum profile in the eyes of most Americans. Bernie's insistence on participating will hand the election to Trump. My idea ticket now is Amy Klobuchar and Mayor Pete, and I'm a registered Republican from Delaware County.
All right.
Well, is Daffy Duck running?
That's interesting. Daffy Duck.
Just wait.
For Daffy Duck. Yeah. Right, right.
Might have better shots.
Who's your favorite duck? My favorite duck has always been Scrooge. But
Scrooge McDuck.
Got the funds.
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe that makes
it. Funds. It's well financed, that duck.
Daisy, our friend Daisy.
Daisy Duck.
This primary, that's right. This primary is not over. Two exclamation points. Yes,
it hasn't even begun.
Yes, Bernie and Biden are ahead, but they are sharing a tiny portion of people who have committed at this point. The rest who have not committed have not made up their minds. And who knows where they will go. And let's see what happens in the South. Kamala and Booker could take southern states. And then it will get very interesting from Daisy.
I think but the reason that Bernie is in such good shape, though, is because we know he's got 20 to 25% who are just with him. They've voted for him before. They've given
they've
him money.
They've been with him.
Yeah, they've been with him, and they're. It's difficult to see them going anywhere, and he's ahead in Iowa, and it will probably. I mean, 25% would be enough to win there. And then it goes to New Hampshire, which is neighboring state to Vermont. He'll probably win there, and then it goes south, and then that's when the other candidates could have a kind of a chance to make their claim. But I mean, Bernie's in all the metrics that you would look at, the early primaries, the money, the polling, he's in great shape.
But also remember that Biden has not been campaigning. And so when you see Biden and Bernie coming up at the top of all the polling, remember that's without Biden really doing any campaigning
Which
at all.
Which could
well,
help.
I mean, if you're making the counter-argument, though, you could just say, well, those are the two guys with the best name recognition.
Yeah, they are.
But and once the other candidates get better known, that those numbers will come down.
But I think it also shows how important it is that Biden now ramp up a real campaign with a real message and see if he can use that name recognition to advantage to actually advance far beyond Bernie. And I'm not sure if he can. We'll find out.
Okay, the real issue for Biden is to say, I can win, Bernie can't. If he says that, and if he makes that stick, he's the winner.
Yeah, but if he does that in...
What'd you say?
I said if he does that in LA, it's exactly the 25% that...
Yeah.
I mean, it's really... I mean,
the dynamic is very similar to the moderate Republicans faced when they were running against Trump. They had this thing where they didn't want to anger that Trump core... But they wanted to make the case that Trump wasn't electable, and it was a really tough balancing act for a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. We heard from Peter in Southampton, Massachusetts. What makes no sense? Okay, let me start again.
Take two.
What would make anyone think that Biden's fourth time on the ticket is the charm, and what polls say he is out front? This makes no sense. Joe, sit down. That's Joe Biden, not Joe Donahue.
No. Well, I'm already seated, but thank you. Well, I mean, look, this is name recognition. Chris said that earlier, and yeah. I mean, that's the case, right? That's why he's out in the polls. Everybody knows who he was, a vice president for 8 years, not to mention his decades of service in the Senate.
So. Yeah, not to mention the terrible things that have happened to his family.
That's right.
And a lot of sympathy for the guy.
Right. A lot of people know him.
Yeah. And he did run for president before and failed, but he had never been the vice president.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a different circumstance.
And Neil says, I am a 70-year-old white male who is not a strong Biden supporter. However, I look back on the mistakes I've made and cringe. The point is, we live, we learn, we change. And if we're not Donald Trump, we grow. Can anyone honestly think that the Biden of 2018 would treat Anita Hill the same way? Isn't that what is most important? Meanwhile, as Democrats search for one who is without sin, the misogynist in chief laughs. Good letter. Mm-hmm. And the last letter I have before me is from Chris in Albany. The more the merrier. All these candidates would make a great president. We must not take our eyes off the real goal, unity. A competitive primary will make a strong final candidate. Though Biden has his issues, I have deep respect for him and he would be a great president. I'm pulling for Mayor Pete, but all of the candidates are fantastic. We must unify no matter what. Don't let anything else get to your heads. Chris from Albany. Nice letter, Chris.
Thanks. Yeah, I typed it up right here.
Yeah. You know, the letter writer makes a great point in that the unity, because it's something that we didn't really see 4 years ago when Trump was the nominee. We went through that. The Republicans went through a tumultuous process of getting to a candidate. The candidate was Donald Trump, who, let's face it, pulled out he pulled ahead very quickly. He won in the beginning and kept the momentum going the entire time.
It was all TV.
But what was the unity after that? I mean, there's so many candidates that wouldn't come out and endorse him. You know, even Paul Ryan wouldn't show up with him in the same events. A lot of people did that. So you look at what unity means, and I think Democrats are probably better at that than the unity, and there's not as much to be concerned about. You heard it with – I guess the point I'm making is the point that the governor made with you yesterday, that he really likes Joe Biden, but if it is Bernie, then obviously he's going to support the person that can beat Donald Trump.
Yes, but he also called him a socialist. And went out of his way, and he sounded an awful lot. The governor sounded an awful lot like Donald Trump. I hate to say it, but you know, his attack on the New York Times yesterday—it was rather
that was
vigorous.
Something.
Yeah. You know, I understand that. I understand that the first thing you want to do when attacked is to lash out and to come back against somebody. You know, the Chartok twins learned that lesson long, long ago. It's best to count to 10 and not to do it. The governor didn't do that yesterday. He was mad at the Times. On a stupid article about whether he was mean to the guy who was running the MTA.
I admit I cringed because I thought it played into the president / Democratic or excuse me, conservative playbook, which is about the fake news and the failures of the press.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. It was not good.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We will have more letters. We certainly have more topics. We have a whole docket to get to. We'll get to that. And we will just remind you real quick that there are still tickets available for the Happy Traum performance celebrating Pete Seeger's birthday, which is on Pete's actual birthday.
On his birthday. May the
3rd.
Yes.
And you can get more information by going to WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. It's $100 per ticket. All the money goes into the lockbox for the June Fund Drive, which is coming up June 3rd. So it's a great way to celebrate WAMC, a great way to celebrate Pete, and WAMC.org. We will be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. And we have your letters here. We're going to do those, and then we'll move on to many other topics that we have to discuss before our time ends in just about 20 minutes.
Kat wrote to us, hello, panel. Love you all. Help me with this. I keep hearing that we're talking more about the men, especially Bernie and Biden, because that's who's leading in the polls and who people are talking about. But isn't that tautological? If that's who is getting more of the press and who's getting credit for the ideas. For example, you said Elizabeth Warren has great ideas, but then they are attributed to and end up helping Bernie. What if the woman got more attention? Wouldn't they perhaps start doing better in the polls? What do you think?
I think it's an excellent proposal. I think that's something that definitely came up into question in 2016 about fair airtime, equitable airtime in press. But I think also you do have to balance that and temper that with some of the existing cases, like the fact that Joe Biden does have this long-standing career, and that's why he's making news.
I mean, you know, the horse race coverage is problematic for sure, and it is true that the media tends to focus on the three or four horses that are leading the pack, and then that kind of reinforces
their position
at the front of the pack. And but I actually think, you know, in a lot of ways, the coverage has been so far a lot better. I mean, the CNN town halls, every single candidate's getting time.
That's fabulous.
I thought Kamala Harris did very well as far as the press coverage about her performance at the town hall on Monday night on CNN. A lot of people talking about her, a lot of people talking about Elizabeth Warren. You mentioned, Jim, the education proposals that got a lot of press. So, I mean, again, I mean, I think it's – I understand the point of the letter, and I think it's valid. But also, we've got, you know, by the time we're done here, we may have 22, 23 candidates. It's a lot of people to juggle.
Go ahead.
I think, you know, it's who is running and you know, elevating these events. I think it's really interesting that we'll see an event that's promoted by a group of women of color who are bringing, you know, eight candidates to task about issues of race. I would like to see that whole field expand too. I think there's a lot of things that could definitely stand to be served to be elevated in terms of what we're talking about and who's bringing these subjects up and who's giving candidates a platform to talk about it.
Well, I was just going to say that Biden and Bernie are getting a lot of coverage, but a lot of that coverage is very negative, you know. So I'm sure Biden would have been happy not to get all the coverage about him being handsy and sniffing hair and all that, you know, and I'm sure.
But they got it out early, Chris. That's playbook stuff. You get it all out early and practically no one is talking about
that. Yeah, but he didn't get it out. It seemed like most of that stuff was coming from one of the other campaigns.
Go rent The Candidate. I don't think you can do that anymore.
And most of the coverage
with Robert Redford, and you'll see the whole theory is get all the negative stuff out early.
And most of the coverage about Bernie is about other Democrats fretting about him being the nominee and what that could mean for the party.
It's not like it's all roses and sunshine for these guys.
The other thing this points to, though, is just, you know, how difficult it is to run a campaign and to stay at the top of the press cycle every day. I remember Elizabeth Warren came out pretty early. She was one of the first ones to come out and declare. So it does fall to her and her campaign to find a way to stay at the top of the press feed every day. That's not an easy thing to do, especially when other candidates are coming out every day and declaring. So I think to some degree it is the candidate's responsibility and their campaign advisor's responsibility.
And remember, a lot of these people are running for vice president.
Right.
And along those lines, I can say right now, Kamala Harris is going to be the candidate. I don't care who wins this thing. I think it makes no sense for anybody else. She's a woman. She's a woman of color.
You think she's going to be the nominee, you mean?
Vice president.
Oh, I think she could very easily be the nominee.
Yeah, why not
president? She's in great shape, too. I mean, we talked earlier about how Bernie's in great shape for the first two for New Hampshire and Iowa, and then it turns very favorable to Kamala Harris, including that big California primary.
Let's see. Yeah.
Well, and if it is Joe Biden, I mean, obviously this is an early predictor, but Stacey Abrams, of course, falls into the line, too.
Yep, sure.
Good conversation starter, Kat.
Dear panel,
yeah.
It seems to me that the elephant in the room in regards to Bernie is being ignored. Don't you think that besides being overtly attacked as a socialist, there'll be a whispered attack of his being Jewish? And that's Nick from South Egremont, where nobody speeds.
Well, if you look back at what happened to Kennedy when he was running, you know, it was the first time we had a Catholic running for president, and he was attacked for that. So it's not beyond, you know, I mean, it's certainly possible that that could come up.
Whatever you said, I was doing something else. Down to earth.
What were you doing? What could have been more
important? We were talking back and forth.
Joe wanted to know why I said South Egremont where nobody speeds, because there's always a cop and it's 20 miles an hour. That's why.
New signage.
And the last time I said it, I heard from a very angry father who said that I was, you know, hurting his kid because people speed. Okay. Morning.
You know what, though? That, the Jewish thing is a little bit interesting, because everybody just describes Bernie as just another white male running for president. Yeah. And then, I mean, that is pretty, that is obviously a groundbreaking thing, and something that would have been unimaginable in American politics 20 or 30 years ago.
Well, it's true, but on the other hand, think about it this way, you know, Chris, the way that it has worked is that you have a president of the United States who sees it in his interest to court the Jewish vote, which is only 2% of the American people, only 2%. You know, I always go around my classroom, I say, how many people are Jewish in this country? And you get these wild things, 50% and 35% and all the rest of it, but it's 2%. But for some reason, this president thinks that the Jewish vote is extremely important, and maybe because it leads in certain areas.
It leads to his global politics and strategies, too.
But but in any case, it may actually help my point. I often hear about our current president and moving his presidency closer and closer to dictatorship. Within the same conversation, a very similar voice, perhaps the same person, interrupts and talks over the rest of the panel, not letting anyone else make a reasonable point. How does Bernie win giving voting rights to serious criminals? And that's from Rob. I think the person in question is me. But that's all right.
Everyone in the room did this.
Started to apologize.
Oh. Nah, it's me.
Were you just accused of
Damn
being a
you,
dictator?
Jim. well, all right. So let's go to other stories as promised. The idea of, so we're talking about Joe Biden being in. Let's talk about Trump on the aides testifying. He says he is opposed to White House aides testifying to Congress, deepening power struggle with the Hill. He has just tweeted that he's not doing this, but we'll go with what these four journalists in the Washington Post report for the moment. President Trump on Tuesday said he is opposed to current and former White House aides providing testimony to congressional panels in the wake of the special counsel report intensifying a power struggle between his administration and House Democrats. In an interview with the Washington Post, Trump said that complying with congressional requests was unnecessary after the White House cooperated with special counsel Robert Mueller's probe of Russian interference in the president's own conduct in office. Trump said there is no reason to go any further, and especially in Congress where it's very partisan, obviously very partisan. That is what he said. And then I just want to get to the tweet from this morning, if I can quickly find it, and if not, I'll just turn it right over to, go ahead, Terry.
No, I just want to say, you know, this is not about what the president thinks or says and wants to do. This is about a constitution that says that we have three branches of government. It says that the legislative branch has the power to investigate whatever they want to investigate. And if that includes the president, they have the power to do it, and they have the power to request documents. Certainly the executive branch has the power to fight it at their will and to speak in a negative way about it. But it's a disgrace to our entire democracy for a president to be so self-centered to the point of where he thinks that he has the power to run every single microscopic thing in this country without
But he has the Supreme Court. He has the Supreme Court. That's where this is going. It's going to go to the courts. Yeah. And in the end, what happened in 16 becomes telling.
And even though he told the Washington Post yesterday that he doesn't want people testifying, the tweet that I was trying to find from 22 minutes ago. No collusion, no obstruction. There has never, all capital letters, been a president who has been more transparent. Millions of pages of documents.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Laugh it up, Jim.
You're right.
millions of pages of documents were given to the Mueller, angry Dems, plus I allowed everyone to testify, except for himself, including White House counsel. I didn't have to do this.
That was all in one tweet.
But they want more, .. Yeah, and then there was more. Yeah. And then there was more.
He's actually scared.
Including, I didn't call Bob Costa of the Washington Post. But, he called me, returned his call.
But it doesn't matter because he does not get to tell the legislative branch of the United States of America what to do.
Yes, yes. But here's the other side of that. As my mom, long past, would have said, predictable. It's all so predictable. He's not going to let those taxes out there for whatever damage they can do. He's not going to let Don McGahn testify if he can avoid it. He didn't want Cohn to be out there. So it's all predictable, and we'll see what that court says, because in the end, that's where it's going.
Well, and I liked his line, I'll go to the Supreme Court if you try to impeach me. That was his line to the Dems. And I'm like—
Which implies that he thinks he controls the Supreme Court. And even when it's to Alan's point, to some degree he does, because he has put two of the justices there that are more likely to side with him than not. Yep.
Well, in the Nixon case,
but I don't think any of them are going to weigh in on impeachment. You know what I mean? I think they
No, I agree. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh, and I was going to say that I think that's you can only focus so much on this case and these statements, because at the end of the day, there's not much that can be done given the current situation. You can't change who's on the Supreme Court right now. So what else? What other strategies can be employed to push this country forward?
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, if the Supreme Court, it almost doesn't matter in a sense, because a lot of this is just, these are delaying tactics. This
Absolutely.
Is an arm wrestling match between Congress and the president, and it's, you know.
And unless
it's going to drag on, it's going to drag on beyond the election.
Yes, but on that, Nancy Pelosi and the president are on the same side. Nancy Pelosi thinks that the longer this thing goes on, the better the chances of electing a huge Democratic plurality in the House as well as the Senate and a president. And she's right. And the president, of course, does not want to get impeached right now.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I like this strategy because what I'd like to see the Democrats do in the House and in the Senate, too, even though they're a minority, is to start moving forward and talking about bread and butter issues like infrastructure and education and job creation. But behind the scenes, continue to work extremely aggressively investigating, subpoenaing, how do you say that word?
Subpoenaing.
There you go. Requesting the documents, doing all the things they need to do, but not make that part of their day-to-day talking points. Let the president continue to speak out against these things in a way that doesn't have sort of a counterpoint to it from the Democrats. I think it just makes him look more and more like a person who is out of his mind.
In the meantime, great things are happening. We are hearing this morning, I don't know how we get to this, but Nielsen, the now fired, head of the security apparatus, is now quoted as saying the president told her to lay off on the Russian thing, basically. And then she didn't want to hear that. That's good stuff. I mean, that's got to kill him because, that's the enemy.
But again, how much damage do those stories do at this point? I don't know.
I don't think the dramatic shift that any people clamoring for change wants to see.
Well, the fact that we have a president in office who can get away
that
without—
That was Mulvaney, right?
Right.
But, is that right?
What's that?
Mulvaney was the one that delivered the message.
Yes.
To Nielsen? Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Although the other thing to know is Nielsen and Kelly had a very tight connection.
Right.
She had been his— actually his admin lead.
Think of
and
all
so,
those people.
So there was clearly, if the White House didn't want something said, that was getting to her without any problem.
Yeah.
But you do have to wonder how much these things really matter to the American people at large, and that we do have a president who has refused to turn in his tax returns since even before he was president, and he's still president. We have a president who is refusing to let his staff and anybody else who he can control from testifying, and the American people seem to still be accepting this as sort of norm, and it's disturbing on many fronts.
Well, because I think the American people have bigger things to deal with, whether it's the border, whether it's opioids, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare, which completely seemed like, a month ago that was the talk of everyone. The Democrats were going to pull ahead with the healthcare talks. And when's the last time you've heard anything solid on that movement?
I think a lot of this stuff just makes people convinced that Washington's even more out of touch. I mean, you have like a massive opioid crisis that's devastating parts of the country. Mm. And it just seems like, you know, this bickering and fighting in Washington that is not really all that relevant. And I think
it's out
for
of
most
touch.
People,
it seems out of touch.
It's just noise, you know? I mean, people may get a general sense of who they like and who they don't like, but I think camps are pretty hardened, you know. Trump's numbers, it doesn't seem to matter what happens. They shift just a point or two. It does, you know, and most people don't pay that close of attention, you know. It's like there's the Twitter world and then there's the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that's the real world are dealing with what people call these bread and butter issues. Yeah. And that's why they can't divert their attention to, you know, what's happening on the Hill.
So there's actually two tie-ins to what we were just talking about. One is Chris's mention of opioids, and we can mention that drug executives were criminally charged in a major opioid case, which is interesting. Federal prosecutors unveiled the first criminal charges against pharmaceutical executives that accused them of illegally diverting opioids. The former chief executive and the head of compliance at a major U.S. drug distributor are accused of a narcotics conspiracy. Lawrence Dowd, who spent 25 years as CEO of Rochester Drug Cooperative, and William Petruski orchestrated a scheme to distribute high volumes of oxycodone, fentanyl, and other highly addictive opioids to pharmacies, knowing the drugs would be sold to people who had no medical need for them. Dowd is 75, and other executives pressed ahead with the sales to increase revenue and boost their salaries, according to the prosecutors.
So let me ask you all a question really quickly. Yes. Do you think that when these guys were doing what they were doing, that at any moment they thought they were entering into a criminal conspiracy or that they were doing something that was indictable or that they could get into terrible trouble for? That moving target becomes very interesting when it comes to who's held responsible.
I mean, it seems like they were out for the money, right?
Yeah.
But did they think? Wait a second.
No, I don't think that at all.
And, you know, we kind of saw the precedent to this case, which was the Oklahoma settlement with Purdue Pharma for pretty much similar grounds. And, you know, they settled for, what, $270 million. So I think you're going to see more of these indictments and you know, executives come to, and doctors as well, you know.
Somebody's got to take the blame. Yeah.
But I think it also only scratches the surface of the myriad other issues that it's caused.
So if you were sitting on the jury, Jen, would you, in fact, convict right now with what you know?
There's definitely a compelling evidence, I would say.
Somebody's got to be held responsible.
I think that these doctors and these, especially the people of the head of the drug companies, I think they knew early on that they were peddling a drug that was highly addictive. Mm-hmm. And they knew that if they could get it in a place or places where it could be distributed, they knew that there would be a larger and larger and larger demand.
No doubt.
For it.
No doubt.
They knew
lobby,
that.
And they also knew how many. Right. They knew how many of these pills were going out into the public. Right. And they had estimates of what the real demand was.
So no doubt you're right, but is it criminal? Was it criminal at the time?
I think it's definitely gross negligence. I think what was the case that they sort of like, you know, 8,300 cases that were, you know, flagged, only four were investigated. I that's boggling.
And they know that they're marketing them to people who don't need them.
Jim?
Well, I think that was the key point. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, I mean, I'm looking at the fact that this is like, I think they're like the seventh largest purveyor, which on one hand makes them a large purveyor. On the other hand says, why these guys? And right. then there's clearly got to be some
Somebody's
real evidence that somebody mm-hmm. knew something wrong. Because they all knew they were selling the drugs. It just wasn't illegal to sell the drugs, right? It's these guys are being accused of, and again, the I haven't been able to find the details in the paper to say what really is going on, but the question asked is, you know, there must have been, just the fact that people were selling these things and knew they were addictive is not technically illegal.
Right.
Once the stories start breaking and they keep pushing, you could get into a lot of questions about ethics. And
well, it was very hard to see conviction.
But it was pretty clear that what was creating was this whole secondary market and a lot of other things, and that brought other drugs along with it and things like that. And at whatever point that started
15 seconds
over, that's when.
It's pretty rich that it's illegal on the street corner but not illegal in the, you know, corporate
Well, that's
boardroom.
Another part of the problem. Mm-hmm.
All right, we're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Jim Hendler, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, and Jen Smith, thank you very much. Alan West, push on...
Pete. May the...
Third.
Third, Friday night at the Linda at 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262.
Happy Trout.
Happy Trout, the best in the business.
All right. Thank you all. We'll be right back.